Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we welcome Vivian Cobb into the Cigar Lounge. Vivian, how are you today?
I'm doing awesome, Joe. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it is so good to have you in here. And I want to start the way I always do, which is to ask you to tell us a little bit about what you do.
What do I do? I speak about financial literacy and confidence, mostly to women. Although, interestingly enough, the men also are very interested in hearing what I have to say. And that stems from my personal story that is pretty intense and significant, but is also something that needs to be shared. So I've made it my passion and my mission to do exactly that.
Well, let me start with a little of that, which is share with, because some people that know you know your personal story. They know how you became an expert in confidence and financial literacy. And it wasn't voluntary.
So, no, it was not.
No. So tell us, how did this happen?
In 2011, my husband, who was a multimillionaire, died from diagnosis to death in 3.5 weeks. And during that 3.5 weeks, I found out we were completely broke. Of course, the man was dying on his deathbed, so it was not the right time for me to challenge him, shall we say, although I was very angry. So I kept my mouth shut, and interestingly enough, so did he. So he died without ever telling me the truth about our finances.
Okay.
I think part of the problem was he didn't really believe he was dying. Because it all happened very, very quickly, as you can imagine. So there was a part of him, I have no doubt, that thought he was going to fix it. He was going to get out of bed one day and everything was going to be fine. So
well, no time for acceptance. So just move on and leave right. You a mess. And what all did you, I mean, in that 3.5 weeks, obviously you're, I guess, trying to cope with what's happening. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, just to handle on what were you doing to try to juggle your future?
Well, instead of spending my last few days with him, I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off, trying to get, he had been procrastinating on updating his will, so he didn't have a will. I was meeting with lawyers. I was meeting with his business partner. I was meeting with his accountant. We were all scrambling, trying to get his affairs in order as quickly as possible before he passed. So that's how I spent the last few days of his life. And just trying to wrap my head around it. It wasn't until after he passed that I found out just how significant a situation I was in. I had no idea that our house was 5 months in foreclosure. I didn't find that out till after he passed. And so it was a lot. I was dealing with, you know, trying to be there for him as best I could. And all the kids, he had three, I have three, and they were beside themselves. So it was a very intense time of my life for sure.
And now as you went through this, I call process, you decided it was your goal or your ambition to make sure that, I guess I want to say, no one ever has to go through this again, nor should anyone's spouse put the spouse in that position. And
exactly.
So you decided to start speaking. Now tell me how the starting speaking came about.
Well, it took a while. First of all, it took me 5 years just to settle his estate. It was a mess, as okay. You can imagine. And I had a lot of creditors breathing down my neck. And I had to get all that taken care of. And then once I got through that, I could actually start grieving him. And then I had to go through being angry or getting over my anger, and then forgiveness. I mean, it's been a very long process. It's been 13 years of a lot of, like you said, processing. But about 7 years ago, I recalled that I had a dream as a 16-year-old, actually, to be a speaker. And I walked into a Toastmasters club meeting and I started speaking. And then 4 years ago, I thought, I really want to do this. I really want to do this as a profession, as my next profession. I've had several in my life, but I would love to. It was about 10 years ago, though, that I thought, I really want to talk about this subject. But then I got off track because it was just too painful. I had to process all the things I described to you, the forgiveness and the anger and all that. I had to process all of that before I could come back around and be able to actually speak about this. But I think it's incredibly important. Like you said,
who helped you process this? How did that all come about? Processing your story and making it coherent and making you able to deliver it without collapsing. Who helped you with that?
I've had a lot of people along the way, a lot of coaches, a lot of mentors that I've really, and especially in Cigar Peg now, I wish I had known about Cigar Peg a lot sooner, I have to say. I think in the last just year and a half that I've been a part of that group, that I've just gotten the most incredible support. But, you know,
well, therapy. Welcome to the family.
Yeah, exactly. It does feel that way, very much so. And but yeah, I a lot of therapy, of course. And then I discovered coaches. So once I got over therapy, I've had some incredible coaches that I've worked with over the last 3 or 4 years that have really, really helped me process the trauma of it all, and like you said, turning it into a story that is impactful, but yet instructional. And I'm still working on finishing up my keynote and figuring out what it is I can offer people to, you know, continue the process for them down the line.
Who, as a speaker, I mean, from the time that you came back and decided, okay, I'm going to start pursuing this, and you went to Toastmasters, who do you consider to have been your biggest role model or supporter in the speaking industry? Did you have a role model?
I did. I think I've been a part of Stage Time University, Darren LaCroix's outfit, the last 2 or 3 years. And I have found that community very supportive, and I've learned a ton about speaking and getting on stages. I think Toastmasters has been really a good starting block. I think I've outgrown Toastmasters, but it certainly was the perfect place to start to learn to speak and gain that confidence that you need to gain, and some rudimentary knowledge to start. And I've worked with coaches, actual, you know, speaking coaches, Michael Davis, I worked with on my first TEDx talk. And then, oh my gosh, I'm spacing her name.
No, that's okay. Well, let me take you to something else. Well, I mean, you've covered a lot of ground, and I want, what is it that right now, what is it that makes you get up and go in the morning? What makes you tick and want to take on the day? What drives you?
Oh, that's an incredible question, because we were talking earlier and you said something about grass growing under your feet. I'm very similar. I don't like that to happen. I'm a go, go, go person, always have been. But my motivation right now, I think, is I have a really important message, and I do feel a sense of urgency around it, because women are at the end of this decade, which is only 6 years away, are going to inherit most over half of the wealth in the United States. And I feel like women are very unprepared for that financial burden, if you will. And I need to get my message out there so that they can start understanding that they need to be on top of their financial literacy and be confident enough to ask questions and get the right help that they're going to need.
Got it. Let me do this. I'm going to ask you a question, but first I want to acknowledge that your, I want to say, failure to know the status of your marital finances is obviously something that you're going to say is a mistake or failure on your part.
Absolutely.
But I want to put that aside for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And forgetting the marital financial situation, through your career, whether it's as a speaker, where you're also, am I right, you're also a real estate agent? Okay, so
yes.
In the business side of your career, what do you think the biggest mistake or failure you've had is that you've learned from, other than the marital thing? No, I want right. Something else.
I think the biggest mistake I do is in my search for knowledge, I tend to just jump on the first bandwagon or the first person I think is an expert of some sort, and listen and think they're going to have the answers that I need. And I think over the last few years, I've learned the hard lesson of there is no magic button. There is no silver bullet or whatever, that it's the same in every business that I've ever had. And I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, adult life. And that is, you got to work your butt off.
Speaking world,
is no different.
In the speaking world, everybody thinks they're a silver bullet. If you hire them, you're going straight to the top.
Exactly.
yes.
So I've spent, in other words, Joe, that translates to I've spent a lot of money that I would love to recoup one day.
Vivian, I assure you we're all in that situation and we'll never recoup it. Because no, that's a problem. We all have had that road because we don't know. And we find out later, oh my God, wait, speaking really is just like every other business I've been in. I didn't know that. I thought it was a trick to it. So when you first started, you went to Toastmasters and you decided you want to be a speaker. What are some of the challenges you faced being a speaker? And I know you mentioned delivering your message and being able to get it out. But I meant just generally, what are some of the challenges you faced being a speaker, putting together your first speeches?
I think that one of my biggest challenges has been getting over the emotional roadblock. It's been very, and I still can't deliver my speech without tearing up.
Okay.
And I've come to accept that about myself. I'm an emotional person, and I literally go in when I tell my story, I am right back there. And I think that's part of my charm at this point, or at least I need to tell myself that.
Well, no, it's part of how you deliver a visual impact to the audience so they can be with you in that time.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I've come to accept that and I'm okay with it.
So did you find your ability to write a speech was easy, or your ability to stand on stage generally was easy?
Yes.
It was just the content that was hard.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I think the content in my second TEDx speech that I did was excruciating to write. Again, a very emotional speech, and I wanted to quit. I think my biggest challenge is, Joe, to be really honest, is to push through and to keep going, because I have wanted to stop. I have said I can't do this, and then I'm like, oh yeah, you can. And it's just been such a process of just getting through to the other side of it. But yeah, I'm very fortunate in that I love being on a stage. I always have been since I was a kid, so that's not been a problem. I'm a very effective speaker. I have a lot of confidence as a speaker. I can get on any stage and speak about just about anything. I'm very grateful for that gift. But it's, yeah, it's the content for sure.
Now, let me back you up for a moment because you said something about I've always been on stage as a kid. Well, what did you do on stage as a kid?
I started dancing when I was 4 years old,
Okay.
and I was one of the little pages in Swan Lake in Australia on the Royal Australian Ballet stage. And
Okay.
so I've been on stage since I was little. And
Wow.
so that's
Okay.
not a problem.
Okay.
I acted in college. You know, I don't have any problem with that.
What was the coolest thing you've ever acted in? What was your favorite role you ever played?
Antigone.
Okay.
I made a great Antigone.
And what did you like about that? Tell me what you liked about that.
She was very defiant
Okay.
and a very strong woman, which I like to think of myself as. And she was feisty, and I guess she was very much like me, so she was easy to play. I liked her.
Okay, I got it. And I guess I'm just curious. So want to say you, okay, so you played Antigone as a child, or is it what, a young adult when you're in
Yeah, young.
college,
I was in
right? Okay.
college.
But then where was she when you let all this financial stuff happen? Come on. She was
Well,
buried somewhere.
it's in it. Well, and I talk about this. I'm glad you brought it up again
Yeah, go
because
ahead.
women have been conditioned for centuries to not talk about money. It's been the
Right.
guy's job, and her job has been to raise the kids, and that needs to change. And it is changing in a lot of ways, but it's societal conditioning that is ingrained in us,
Okay.
and that is exactly what I talk about. And same thing, I mean, I was a single mom, Joe, when I married, and I knew how to do my own finances, but in my own mind I was like, oh, I'm married, okay, I'll just hand over my financial future to him.
Okay,
And
no.
yeah, and
No,
I look back
and
on
that's cool.
that
I
and
just
I
had to take that shot because I'm just picturing it going, you know, one of the hardest headed, determined women in Greek mythology. And it's like, oh my God, she should have surfaced back then. That's all I was joking.
Yeah, I agree. Where
So
was she?
let me ask you this. There's something else you said earlier that I want to go back to. You said that you realized when you were a child you had wanted to be a speaker. You said that in the early part of the interview, and I stuck on it, so we're coming back to it. As a child, what exposure did you have to speakers to say, I want to do that?
Again, in high school,
Yeah.
I went to speech contests
Okay.
and I loved it. I was good at it. I won trophies back then.
Okay.
That's how I spent my weekends as a teenager, was at speech contests doing poetry reading, doing duet scenes,
Okay.
and doing oh, I forget what it's called, but you basically are regurgitating, for lack of a better word, a speech that's been done. And
Sure.
I just loved it.
Did you ever at that time have a chance to see a professional speaker out there on stage and go, oh my God, I want to do that? Or,
Oh, all the every time.
okay.
Every time I saw a professional speaker, I went, oh, I can do that.
And do you remember one of the first or among the first that you saw that you said, I can do that or I want to do that?
Not specifically
Okay. No,
somebody
I'm just
in
curious because.
particular.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, I mean, because
But
I
just.
can tell you, I never saw a professional speaker speak until I was way into my adult years. So I didn't, never knew it was even a thing.
Yeah. I'm
You
just
know.
talking about anybody who.
Oh, you're just talking about generically somebody speaking.
Yeah.
Oh, and
Like
going,
if
I
I
want to
was
be,
in
okay.
college, or and I went to an event and there was somebody on stage speaking, or like you said, my first conferences that I went to as a young adult,
Yeah.
and I'd see somebody speaking and I was like, oh my gosh, I could do that. And most of the time I would say I could do that better than they do.
Well, and if you could roll back the hands of time to those college days when you were in speaking contests and realize that you could make a living being a speaker.
Oh, it
What
would have been a
advice,
game
what
changer.
advice do you think you would have given yourself?
Oh my God, it would have been a game changer. That's the path I would have taken.
Okay.
Hands down.
So if then you knew things would be different. And so let's assume that some young college student sees you speak and says, I want to do that, Vivian. What advice are you going to give that student? What advice do you give the student to get them to do this?
Well, the first thing I would say is it's not easy. It's that's going to be the first thing. I think it's just like acting. All the people who have that dream of being on stage and being an actor or in movies or any, I think it's right up there with the same thing.
Okay.
That I think you have to have a certain personality to want to be on a stage and open yourself up. The nice thing about acting is you can hide behind a character. In speaking, if you want to be authentic and you want to really connect with your audience, you really can't get away with that for long. Or some people can, I guess, but yeah. The better speakers are very genuine and very authentic. So it's definitely different in that way. But my advice would be, if you want to do it, be ready to work your butt off. It's not going to be easy.
Vulnerability is as scary as it is awesome.
Right.
So, let me ask you. So right now you're sitting here, we're chatting, and you're looking into the new year. What projects do you have coming up this year that you are excited about?
Well, I'm very excited about the fact that I'm writing my book. Hats off to anybody who's written a book. It's just not even, it's so hard for me anyway. It's so hard. And no, I'm not going to use AI to write my book because it's my story I'm writing and AI doesn't know my story. So I am writing my story because I think it's really important. From stage, I can only tell a few minutes, very few minutes of my story. And I know that people want the rest of the story.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to write it in a book.
Good.
Again, excruciatingly difficult to go back through all that. But again, I feel very important. So I'm very excited about that project. And then I have some things. I'm trying to put together a panel for the entrepreneurial alumni organization for Dartmouth College.
Okay.
That's really exciting for me. And that's going to happen in May. The other thing I'm excited about is I'm going to Bali in September to the Global Federation Speakers Summit. So rubbing elbows with speakers from around the world is going to be really fun.
That's awesome.
I want to see what other people are doing in other places.
Which that'll bring me back to something you said you danced when you were younger in Australia.
Yeah.
Tell us, where were you born and raised? I mean, what's your life travel been like here?
Well, I actually didn't move to the United States until I was 13 years old. I was an expat and I was born in Ankara, Turkey.
Okay.
And then I lived in Libya. Then I lived in Paris, France. And then I moved to Melbourne, Australia. And then I moved to Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
And I lived in, that's where my dad was a geologist for Mobil Oil, and Mobil moved their headquarters to Dallas. So we settled there, and I went to high school in Dallas and went to UT, got a degree in radio, television, film. Yeah. And then I moved to Colorado Springs in 93, and I've been there for 31 years.
That's beautiful. Let's go back. I want to just kind of looking over the past, I guess, now we're saying 2011 is when everything changed. So the last 12 years, 13 years of your life. If you look back over that 13 years, do you consider yourself to be successful?
Yes.
And what does that feel like or look like to you? You answer that beautifully. So my question is, You know you feel it. What is it you feel? So what are people, what makes you feel successful so people can understand it?
Well, I was literally financially devastated. I mean,
right.
Absolutely ground zero. It's like a little nuclear bomb went off in my life in 2011. And the fact that in 2024, I built myself back up, I don't really have a full-time job. I could probably, if I really lived on a tight budget, I could probably not have to work anymore, but that isn't how I want to live. But I mean, just the fact that I have pulled myself up from the bootstraps, I have rebuilt my life, my financial life, to where I'm very comfortable. I can travel, I can do what I want. I think it's remarkable, because there are people out there who would have cratered. And I just, at that, to me, that was not an option. And I look at that as being successful. And I'm now pursuing a dream that I've had since I was 16 years old. And whether I'm successful or not, I love it so much. I'm so passionate about it that every little thing I can do, every person that I can talk to is worth something. And so, yeah, I feel very successful in my life right now.
It is beautiful. And I think that's a place for us to end and say,
okay.
Let me ask this, just in case people want to get a hold of you, what is the best way to find Vivian Cobb when you are trying to reach her? And this is for Cigar Peg people. Where should they go? How do they find you?
Really easy. I am, my website is viviancobbspeaking.com. My email is vivian@viviancobbspeaking.com. And there is a form you can fill out on my website that will send me an email if you forget my email. So very
beautiful,
easy.
Beautiful. Well, Vivian, thank you so much for joining us in the Cigar Lounge today. And I look forward to seeing you in person somewhere along the line at Cigar Peg.
I'm sure you will. Thanks so much, Joe.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.